This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03, midweek, Wednesday afternoon, July 31st. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. Taco Bell is set to expand the use of artificial intelligence voice technology in its drive-thrus. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, the Federal Reserve will issue its latest decision on interest rates in less than an hour. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Diane Swank, Chief Economist, KPMG in Chicago. Diane, thank you for joining us today. And you heard Ann talk about it in the business report, and that is the setting the table for cutting interest rates later this year at the Fed meeting today. They're not going to announce the cut today, but they will lay down the runway for September and beyond. But what is the balancing act that the Fed governors are weighing as they decide to cut interest rates?
Well, that's a great question. The biggest issue, of course, is the one that Chair Powell himself said as he testified to Congress in the second week of July, and that is that what keeps him up at night is the trade-off between over-tightening and keeping derailing inflation and the risk that we cause more undue pain in the labor market and inadvertently trigger a recession. And that is something the Fed is really hoping it can avoid. Many of the warnings we've seen in recent weeks have sort of seen an escalated fear of recession, and that's because we have a tale of two economies. We have the economy that's represented in the household survey, which actually calls up people and says, are you working or not? And we have an economy that's represented in the employment payroll survey, which is how many paychecks we're generating each month. They have diverged dramatically. Now, the Fed has relied more on the payroll survey because that has gotten a better response rate on revisions, and we've seen a degradation in the household survey. But there is warning flags out there, and the Fed is worried about this, and I think they should be worried about it at this stage of the game. Many people say, why not cut today if you're going to cut in September? Well, the Fed has also been clear that it doesn't want to cut prematurely and have to reverse track. It has a credibility at stake in terms of really derailing inflation. And that means for many people, not just a slowdown in the pace of rate of price increases, but for many prices, they need to fall a bit. And we're starting to finally see that. That is something the Fed wants.
We're talking about today's Fed meeting with Diane Swank, Chief Economist, KPMG in Chicago. The private payroll report from ADP showed that 122,000 new jobs were added in July. That was below analysts' expectations and one of the lowest numbers in quite some time. But as you mentioned, the government jobs report that comes out on Friday morning and the ADP report, it really diverge, and they go in widely different directions. So either we're going to see a very low number from the Fed on Friday morning or like a surprise million jobs report and nothing in between.
Well, I wouldn't expect a million, but I do think it's important that that is the private sector side. And where we know they're still adding payrolls, and interestingly today in the employment cost index, is in the state and local sector. Job openings in the state and local sector at the end of June popped up again, especially excluding education. So state and local governments, which are not included in that private sector payroll survey, are adding jobs. So that could bring the number back up, but it's relying on a sector that's less interest rate sensitive, that lagged until we didn't even recoup the jobs lost that were lost to the COVID recession until November of last year. And we're now seeing that wages in the public sector are outpacing by a lot wages in the private sector. That's because many of those wages were set to union contracts that have now caught up and reset. And in fact, in the employment cost index today, which is a measure of overall compensation, it cooled a bit from the pace that we saw in the first quarter. But all of that cool down came in the private sector. That's good news for the Fed that wages are sort of normalizing. It's still well above the pace we saw pre-pandemic. That's good for consumers. And as long as it's outpacing inflation, that's great. But what we saw was a massive surge in the pace of growth in payrolls and compensation growth for public sector workers.
Diane Swank, Chief Economist, KPMG in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up, a fast food chain changing its drive-through lane.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Parent company Yum Brands says it's bringing artificial intelligence technology to drive-through lanes at Taco Bell restaurants. Let's get the details from RJ Hadavi, head of analytical research at the foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI in Palo Alto, California. RJ, thanks for joining us today. And this is an interesting announcement from Taco Bell that they're trying to bring in AI technology to the drive-through so quickly after McDonald's said it was dropping that particular experiment.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And it just the latest in the quick service space to try to use AI and voice ordering technology to hopefully simplify the process and improve throughput. You're exactly right, Rob. It is very interesting coming after McDonald's said they needed to do more before they would think about it again, relaunching an AI technology. Taco Bell is confident. They've said they've tested it for about 2 years. They've already implemented it in about 100 stores. So with that, I think they see what they like, and we'll roll it out further across the country. But as you and I know, it's a very difficult process, and it's yet to be perfected, I think, at any quick service restaurant to this point.
Cheaper, faster has been the guiding principles of quick service restaurants since Ray Kroc bought the McDonald's system from the McDonald brothers back in the 1950s. So AI is just the latest application of that particular philosophy. If all goes well, if implemented properly, how does AI become a productivity tool inside the fast food restaurant?
Yeah, it's a good question, and our visitation data is somewhat mixed on those retailers and those restaurants that have introduced AI ordering. It's still kind of in that implementation and perfection phase right now, but I think if implemented correctly, I mean, certainly you can improve transactions per hour, and we're not just seeing it in terms of voice ordering it too. We're starting to see some automated make line, assembly line products for groups like Sweetgreen and Chipotle. So that's another use of AI. So I think it could help the throughput, with more transactions per peak hour. That certainly helps the bottom line too. But I mean, I think there's other applications too that are starting to be very interesting. AI could be used as a tool for training employees, which is one of the more costly endeavors that a lot of restaurants have to go through. There's a lot of back office type things that AI could help out with. So any function within a restaurant, we're seeing some sort of AI or technology solution surface, some further along than others. But it's been interesting to watch. And to your point, it's all about saving costs and making your businesses more efficient right now.
And when it comes to the AI order-taking technology, and there have been some viral videos of some famous misfires of the McDonald's AI tallying up dozens of orders of one thing. But if it is implemented properly and it can take the order quickly and accurately, even in a business where seconds count, those seconds do add up.
They do, absolutely. And it's something that not only, increasing the amount of people you can get through in a given time period, but it also takes a task that generally most QSR employees don't like to do out of their hands, too. And, maybe they can be reallocated to somewhere else within the restaurant to help speed up that process as well. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I think even Taco Bell will probably be the first to admit there's probably going to still be a learning curve as they take it from 100 locations to the rest of the chain. But it'll be interesting to see which one of these companies really gets it right, and what kind of benefits they see both from a visitation standpoint as well as a bottom line standpoint.
RJ Hadavi, head of analytical research at the foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI in Palo Alto, California. Coming up next, a downtown restaurant trades tablecloths for tacos.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Rosebud Italian Restaurant in the Prudential Building is no more, replaced by a casual Mexican concept. Let's discuss the strategy with Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the restaurant coach in Chicago. Izzy, thank you for joining us today. And this is all a part of the story of adapting to the new reality in downtown Chicago. And that is a lot of the restaurants that really catered to the expense account lunch crowd have discovered that that group doesn't really exist anymore in the numbers they had before the pandemic.
Oh, absolutely. I think at this point, they just don't exist. And what these guys are doing is truly strategy thinking.
Now, this is a casual Mexican place that's going into the Rosebud on Randolph location. I know that place very well because it's in our building. And right now, especially on summer afternoons, you need to have the footwork of Walter Payton to get through all the crowds gathered at the corner of Michigan and Randolph. So foot traffic should not be a problem for this place, but it's really just a matter of getting the people who are walking past Millennium Park, going north on Michigan Avenue to actually sit down and take a bite, and the old Italian concept at Rosebud was just not getting it done.
No, I mean, the Rosebud concept is great in lots of places. As a matter of fact, I ate at one of the restaurants last night in Deerfield. Fantastic. But downtown and that environment has changed substantially, and, you know, customers no longer want to spend, you know, that pasta type money and take that kind of time at lunch. So this is a smart move, going with Mexican, much less expensive, much faster to serve, and for the restaurant in the long run could certainly have a lower labor cost, which in today's market is huge for profitability.
And price fatigue is definitely on the mind of everybody. You're seeing that in the quarterly reports of the quick service restaurants. The calling card of this new place, $25, will get you three tacos and a margarita. Now, obviously, if you have a downtown location such as Michigan and Randolph, your rent is higher, and there are just all sorts of expenses related to being in that location. Can you make money there?
You can, but again, I mean, it's a smart move, moving from that pasta, which is more of an upscale, full-service type meal, where you're going to spend a little bit more time. And again, it takes more labor to do that concept, so you're right. The rent isn't going to change, but what can change is you can serve more people. You can serve them faster. You can do easy to go or eat, dine in, and again, have a lower labor cost. So it's, again, this is in these environments in big cities, this is very strategic because the sit down expense account clientele is not there anymore.
And I will personally have a front row seat to how this particular concept evolves. Thank you for joining us today, Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, the restaurant coach in Chicago.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Former President Trump is making a controversial visit to Chicago. We'll check in with reporter Terry Keschner and political editor Craig Delamore. Personal Finance Wednesday. Many people find that the more money they make, the more they spend. We'll discuss the dangers of lifestyle creep, and drivers are experiencing the latest edition of sticker shock at the gas pump. WBBM Business. Markets are higher. The Dow is up 237 points. NASDAQ up 393. The S&P 500 is up 77. We have 84 degrees right now in Chicago under partly sunny skies. 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. Former President Trump is scheduled to appear at this hour at the National Association of Black Journalists Convention here in Chicago. As WBBM political editor Craig Delamore reports from The Loop, the appearance is not without its detractors.
Organizers of the NAB annual convention were filling every seat in the ballroom here at the Chicago Hilton. Attendees were crowded into the lobby hoping to get in. They had time. The event was supposed to begin at noon, but word went out that things would be late. Donald Trump is being interviewed by three journalists this day: Rachel Scott of ABC News, Harris Faulkner, a Fox News host, and Kadia Goba of Semaphore, an online news source. This is a controversial appearance with this group. When he was in the White House and before, former President Trump sometimes referred to journalists of color as stupid and otherwise insulted them. Some attendees here said he shouldn't have been invited. One told me she was angry when she first heard he would be here, but now wants to see the interview, and now she's angry that Vice President Kamala Harris won't appear. At the Chicago Hilton, Craig Delamore, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
Protesters making their voices heard outside the hotel. Let's go live to WBBM's Terry Keschner.
Yeah, Rob, all the protesters have been moved across the street from the Hilton. That's where we are, on the park side of Michigan Avenue. We have a large and very loud pro-Palestinian group of supporters who are denouncing Donald Trump. We have many other smaller groups and individual protesters as well, including one group of musicians called Sousaphones Against Hate. They were getting a lot of attention and bringing some smiles as well. Some people are holding up Jesus signs. Some are denouncing the rich. One woman has a sign that warns of Project 2025. All of this while a line of Chicago police stand watch, both to keep the protesters away from the hotel, it seems, but also to keep people safe and out of the way of traffic. Live on the 700 block of South Michigan Avenue, Terry Keschner, 105.9 WBBM.
It's 12:33 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are higher. Joining us on the Village Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Chris Johnson, market strategist with the Johnson Research Group in Cincinnati. Chris, thank you for joining us today. And where to begin today? Because it seems like there are all sorts of market-moving activities. And let's begin with the Fed. The Fed meeting is, they're going to make an announcement on the future potential for interest rate cuts later this afternoon. And is the market essentially primed for that September rate cut announcement?
Oh, absolutely, Rob. You've got about 25 minutes until we hear that announcement from the Fed, and then Jerome Powell obviously will do the press conference. The press conference is going to be the bigger deal here, because that is where you're going to hear him kind of map out their expectations, as well as the market's expectations for what's going to happen here in September, most likely. So investors, obviously, with the, you know, the better than expected inflation reports we've had over the past couple of months, are already jockeying for position in terms of sectors to play ahead of those interest rate cuts.
Now, Chairman Powell is not going to come out and say, look, it's September, you can take that to the bank, pal. He's going to give himself an out. He's going to couch it in very cautionary language. So inside all of that passive voice rhetoric, what's going to be the signal that September cut's going to happen?
Well, it's always, as we say, the devil's in the details here. It's usually with Fed Chairman Powell. It's usually a couple of words that we watch for, and it really is going to be about persistence and what we've seen in terms of inflation. I don't think the Fed is going to completely dismiss the idea that inflation could still be a little sticky. We've heard that for the last couple of meetings being a strong message, but I think you're also going to find that Jerome Powell is going to talk a little more about the jobs market, because we have seen, you know, a little bit of a blink in the jobs market slowing down here, and that's exactly what they want, but they don't want too much right now. Ideally, you're going to see them pave the way for two cuts here this year and maybe a couple more next year. And keep in mind, that is really going to send some of these areas of the market higher. You're going to see housing and anything that's been interest rate sensitive, especially those small cap stocks. People are going to still continue to pile from large cap technology into these areas that are really values if the Fed moves on inflation.
Now,
on interest rates.
I was going to say, we do have a bit of a rally today. And how much of this rally is strictly interest rate optimism? And how much of this is tech optimism?
Yeah, it's the best of both worlds. Investors are hyped up right now. You got NVIDIA, which is the one stock that everybody watches. It's up more than 10% right now. And that's off the heels of AMD coming out last night or this morning and giving us a better than expected earnings report. So semiconductors have been pulling back. And think about it. That is one of the areas of the market that has been very richly valued here. So that shift from overvalued technology into undervalued semi or small cap is going to continue. But right now, you kind of have a sweet spot for the market because everybody loves these Magnificent Seven stocks. Keep in mind, we're going to see Apple, we're going to see Amazon, we're going to see Meta here over the next 24 to 36 hours. And those are really going to be the thing that either confirm or deny whether this is a dead cat bounce or not.
Now, the year from heck continues for Boeing. Wider than expected loss, disappointing revenue in the second quarter. But they bounced their CEO, they announced a new one, and the stock's up 2%.
Yeah, everybody's looking at this as a value, Rob. It's not a situation where they expect the company to turn around very quickly. You're seeing leadership changes, and that is what investors really needed. Confidence has been low that Boeing is going to be able to turn this around over the long term. Remember, it's a duopoly, though. You look at them and Airbus, and there's nobody else. Even when you see airlines cutting back on their purchases, you know over the long run they're going to be coming back to Boeing at some point here. So from a long-term perspective, the fundamental changes are helping. Over a short-term period, I think you're still going to see volatility in the stock.
Chris Johnson, market strategist with the Johnson Research Group in Cincinnati. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, you may not realize it, but you may be experiencing the phenomenon known as lifestyle creep, and we'll tell you how you can stop it.
It's Cashing In with Conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. If your standard of living rises along with your discretionary income, you may find yourself in trouble should your income drop. We're joined by Chris Evans, Everett, fiduciary financial planner, president of Everett Wealth Solutions in Forest Park, and author of the book, The Prescription for a Healthy Retirement. Chris, thank you for joining us today. And these segments, I always like to caution myself first before we do them, because I don't want us to sound like we're scolding you, the audience. We don't want to tell you, oh, you're doing this wrong, you're experiencing some sort of moral failing. But these things happen over the course of time. You make a little bit more money, and you're more confident going out to eat more often or grabbing that really fancy cup of coffee on the way into work. And then all of a sudden you discover, hey, where'd my raise go? Well, it went to all that other stuff you're buying.
Absolutely. And if you're not careful, that creep, it just all of a sudden, there it is. And it's totally blindsided. You have a couple who was doing so well. They had their first baby. They got a new job, or one of them got a new job, making a lot more money, but also the expenses went higher. That new job caused such lifestyle creep that right now they're trying to figure out how to change things to get back to a more normal, a more prudent lifestyle. And it's really hard. You know, once you have an expanded lifestyle, it's hard to shrink that back down again. I think one of the smartest things that you can do is to at least save 30% of your income, live below your means. It pays huge dividends because without knowing it, usually someplace in life, some surprise will come along the way and you have this major oops that you have to deal with. Know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I experienced that over the weekend. I have a bike that was given to me by a relative, and I found out, Chris, I had to put the bike down on Saturday, and I enjoyed riding this bike around town, so I needed to get a new one, and that's this kind of oops that comes along. The refrigerator breaks, a child chips a tooth. All of these things come along, and yeah, that money's got to come from somewhere.
Or you lose a job unexpectedly.
Yeah, I mean that's the bad thing. There are annoying things that happen over the course of your life, but losing a job that is the bad thing, and that's something you don't want to think about, but you have to be prepared for it.
Yeah, you have to have some sort of emergency fund. And I'm not talking about piling everything into your retirement plan. Yes, of course, you can usually borrow from them, but come on. You don't want to interrupt that compounding. Set aside some money that you can quickly get your hands on that's in an emergency account. Pays huge dividends.
Now, I was going to say, do you think people, though, have learned that lesson about lifestyle creep, or had that lesson forced upon them just because prices have jumped up so considerably over the past 4 years? Yes, the rate of inflation is slowing down, but life in 2024 is a lot more expensive than it was in 2019. And as a result, everybody kind of had to learn how to live with that reality.
Yeah, some have not. I mean, and it's very expensive out there. I don't care what they tell me about inflation slowing down. Every time I go to the grocery store, I don't feel that. And so if you prepare, because life always challenges you, and if you don't keep that inside your core that you have to do something to be okay when those hiccups occur, you can fail. Last thing you want to do is go back and move in with mom and dad. Mom and dad don't really want to see you move back in with them once you're launched.
Yeah, I was going to say, in my case, I don't think a family of five could necessarily fit into my parents' house anymore. So very good advice. Chris Everett, fiduciary financial planner and president of Everett Wealth Solutions in Forest Park, author of the book, The Prescription for a Healthy Retirement. Thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. And still to come, gas prices are moving up once again.
It's money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business. Business Hour continues.
Gas prices in the Chicago area are rising at double the national rate. Let's find out why from Phil Flynn, senior market analyst with the Price Group in Chicago. Phil, thank you for joining us today. And I would imagine these latest gas prices figures do not take into account the run-up in the worldwide price of oil based on the latest actions in the Middle East.
I think you're absolutely right, and that's the bad news for Chicagoans driving. I think the other bad news, of course, is that, you know, the refineries around Illinois seem to have one problem after another. You know, this time it was the Joliet plant. Other plants, of course, we've had troubles in Indiana, and that all drives up prices. But, yeah, make no mistake about it. The geopolitical risk factors, Rob, are on the rise. You know, the potential of the war, you know, between Israel and Hamas escalating after, you know, the back and forth with Hezbollah, an attack on a general in Iran. You put it all together, you couldn't write a script for a more bullish market.
And but we at the same time, though, we still have the price of oil trading about $77 and change at last check. So it's still below $80 a barrel and still far below the run up we saw before the war in Ukraine between Russia and Ukraine in 2022. Does the potential exist for the price of oil just based on the factors we have right now? Does the potential exist for it to rise above $80 a barrel or even touch 90?
I think it's highly likely, you know, and one of the things, you know, the market seems to have been very pessimistic the last couple of weeks. It has been concerned about, you know, demand in China. They've been concerned about the fact that, you know, despite the fact global tensions are rising, there's been no major disruptions of supply. But when you step back and you look at the oil inventories, they're dropping dramatically. We got a report today from the Department of Energy that showed that U.S. crude supplies fell for the fifth week in a row. That's the first time that's happened since January of 22. And so when that happens, we see a market that's tightening, even though it's been ignoring some of the bigger issues. And so when supplies fall like that, there's not much room for error. And with all the potential for error around the world right now, those prices could pop very easily.
We're talking about gas prices with Phil Flynn, senior market analyst with the Price Group in Chicago. What has been the general state of summer driving demand on gas, you know, compared to previous years? Has this been on trend with other summers?
You know, actually, you know, we've been hearing a lot that demand has been lackluster, right? People have been disappointed. But, you know, data today shows that on the four-week moving average, gasoline demand is actually higher than it was a year ago at this time. And though it isn't as the growth might not be as much as people had hoped for, people are back behind the wheel. It's been more erratic. People are, you know, spending a bit more money. But it seems that as soon as gasoline prices dip down just a little bit, people get back on the open road and start to, you know, racking up the miles.
And then very quickly, Phil, we talk about geopolitical tension and zooming in on the Middle East and the various issues there. But how is this disputed election in Venezuela also playing into the worldwide oil market?
Absolutely huge. You know, the Biden administration has really looked to Venezuela to keep oil prices down ahead of the election. You know, they worked, you know, trying to lift sanctions on the Maduro regime, you know, and then after this election that's been disputed, I don't know how they're going to do that. So there's a real possibility the Biden administration is going to be forced to put on new sanctions. That should tighten supply even more, and that means gasoline prices are probably going to go up even more.
Phil Flynn, senior market analyst with the Price Group in Chicago.